Welcome, everybody, to the Too High Podcast. I am Seth Galina alongside Deontay Lee. As always, Deontay, what's going on?
Not much, man. Feeling good. It's been a busy past couple of weeks in all things football, but things are good right now.
You guys got another W last Friday night. You guys are the 10th ranked team in San Diego, if I understand how maxpreps.com works. So congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And none of this, the playoffs are coming, so none of these numbers matter. I know I'm such a fucking coach right now, but none of these numbers matter.
All right, let's get people to stop listening to the pod right now, because I want to ask you, how does California high school football work in terms of how it's set up, like the counties, the this? Because I when I went on Max Preps, it was like San Diego, which is like its own thing. Now, does this mean like the city, or does it mean like the city plus, like, okay, yeah, it's San Diego, but it's like it's so much more around it. Like, how does this work in California?
So San Diego specifically is the entire county. So it's broken up into what's called sections. So San Diego covers the city, all the unincorporated cities around San Diego, stretching all the way into like the Imperial Valley. So it's like, it's 2 to 3 hours east of me. So you're talking like halfway between San Diego and Arizona. So we cover a pretty big stretch. There's a southern section which covers from like Los Angeles up to Bakersfield. I know that is absolutely 0 point of reference for you, but California people would know. It's another huge stretch. So there are a bunch of different sections, and then from there they're broken up into class. So the same way you would think like D1, D2, D3, like at the college level, we do the same thing, and it's fluctuated over time. It used to be by school size back when like that actually mattered, you know, enrollment numbers. But now, you know, in an era where all the athletes kind of go to the same schools, now it's kind of based off of like how successful you've been over like this 3-year rolling average. So that's kind of how it works. There's somebody who knows all the algorithms that can explain it much better than me, but that's the best way I can put it with my small brain.
9% of our American audience is from California, so you know. So we've gotten rid of 91% of our followers.
Right.
About a minute. I'm curious.
I'm sure about 8% of that are people who are related to me or grew up with me.
The last thing I wanted to ask for high school football, you know more than me about this. Has high school football, in terms of getting into the playoffs, in a lot of counties and a lot of states, what I understand is like they've all gone to more of an algorithmic, like, you know, power rankings approach to putting teams in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the best way I could say it is like, and it's not a one for one thing, but imagine if Bill Connolly's S&P Plus decided how teams were ranked. It's kind of the same idea, like trying to judge, like, opponent adjusted, basically, who you play, who you beat, who you lose to, who they played, beat, and lost to. So it's just this big spider web of, you know, that kind of stuff. And it all goes into an algorithm because it's hard, right? Like if you're a team in some small community in San Diego, for example, and all the teams around you stink, but you're the new school and you have all the new money, so you're a powerhouse, like you can't really be judged off of beating up on the bad teams all the time. So because of that, you kind of need math. Now, San Diego has an issue because we just change the way that we do things, but I won't belabor that point right now. But for the most part, yes, high school sports basically all go by algorithms because the best teams can't schedule anybody else except for the best teams out of state. And there's no way to create a point of reference for it unless you have some kind of math equation.
All right, cool. All right, let's spend 5 minutes talking about my Assassin's Creed Odyssey dynasty that I'm doing right now. I just got to Athens. Anyways, okay, so let's get into it. We have a big college football show today, but we want to start with kind of bookend this whole college football discussion that we're going to have with a couple quarterbacks. We were trying to figure out what we wanted to talk about today, earlier today, and because we couldn't figure anything out, that means if I need to fill time and I watch Matt Stafford because he's my favorite quarterback right now. So they get the win, you know, comeback win against the Lions. But one of the things I thought was interesting was what Matthew Stafford brings to the Rams, and we've talked about this before, is the ability to hit huge plays all the time. So they're doing it a lot off just regular drop back, the regular drop back game. You saw a couple where he holds the safety and throws over the top to Cooper Kupp. But there's one play that they've been killing teams on, and that is their progression off of their regular kind of outside zone boot action. So this is the Sean McVay thing. You know, we ran it so much with Jared Goff. I mean, there were games where he would do it like 25 times with Jared Goff. Obviously, you're getting a lot less with Matt Stafford. We've talked about that. They did do it quite a few times, actually, in the Lions game. But and the Seahawks game, I believe. So anyways, their first play off of their boot action is the flood concept. So the outside most receiver is usually in a tight split. And that means he's going to run a corner because they need someone vertical down the sideline. So he runs a corner route. He gets vertical down the sideline. The next receiver, usually coming from the backside, is running a 12-yard crossing route. And he's the middle guy in the flood. And then you have a flat route coming at 1 yard or 0 yards or whatever. So their first progression off of that and how they hit so many big plays. And the Bears game, the first touchdown of the season for the Rams is on this play, I believe, where they show you that they're going to run the corner route from that condensed split, you know, X receiver or whatever, or Z receiver. And then he bangs it all the way across the safety's face on a post route. And that's a big way that they've always hit plays like that. One of the things that I noticed the Lions did is that middle of the field safety, when they were playing it and they got cover one or cover three out of it, he was just not going to leave the middle of the field. So what ends up happening a lot is the safety sees that play. He's trying to help his cornerback friend on the corner route, on that deep corner route. So he starts drifting away from the middle of the field. And that's how they get you when they bang it back to the post. So I saw the Lions say, no, like that's it. Not happening. We're just not going to let this happen. And I think that's just like, this is the type of things that you're going to start seeing from defenses that play against the Rams going forward, because they can be so explosive at any moment's notice.
Right. And the thing that's really interesting about it from the Lions' perspective is a lot of the ways that they play in coverage is by necessity because they're so hurt. Like they play a lot of soft cover two and a lot of very soft cover three, where they get a bunch of depth, but it does take that away. And it kind of gets you back into what you want in the first place when you're playing cover three, right? Which is to force the ball deep and outside and never give up the post ball. And in this era with all these crossing routes, what we've seen is more and more free safeties that kind of have to hang where you're playing the middle of the field, but you also got to help, take away that area where you can get those drift routes that we've talked about, where you can get those crossing routes like we've talked about. I know the exact play you're talking about. And versus any other team this year, and in almost any other situation, that post breaks off of the corner and there's just a bunch of airspace to throw into. But with the safety being like a legit 29 yards deep by the time the route breaks, like there is no post that can get open against somebody who is that deep down the field. So at least in terms of taking away that off the play action game, I do think that that's a smart way to do it. I would be interested to see what the next counter is. Maybe you try to get to it without your play action game. I guess you have to hit more of the drift routes, right? Like that's really the thing. If you hit more of those, quick hitting 10 to 15 yarders to try to hold that guy's feet. And then you break the double move off of that, where you kind of get that kind of drift stalk and go and try to run up the back of the free safety that way. So that would be an interesting kind of counter punch that I'm sure that they probably have prepared already.
It's funny thinking about this team, because one of the things that I think both of us have noticed, and I think this is just true throughout football, is like, and we're going to talk about this, I think, on Thursday night when we talk about the Vikings in particular. On Thursday podcast when we talk about the Vikings in particular. But the Vikings get you into cover three because of the personnel they put on the field. CJ Ham. Right. They put CJ Ham on the field and they get you into cover three because defenses see a fullback, they see a second tight end, they get nervous, they spin a guy down, they play cover three. The thing that's interesting about the Rams is they can get you into cover three in not by a personnel thing per se, because they're going to be 11 personnel with a tight end, with Higbee and then Van Jefferson and their two all-world receivers, Woods and Cooper Kupp. They get you into cover three because of how many option routes they run underneath. And like, because like, you know, whenever you take away an underneath player and bring him back to run cover four, cover two, whatever, well, cover six, whatever, like, like that opens up a lot of space underneath. And you don't want to live in a world where you're giving all that space and they're running all these option runs, right? The Saints killed teams with Breeze for years with that stuff. So that's how they get you into cover three. And you only do that with two all world receivers and a quarterback who's playing out of his mind right now.
Right. And that was really the point that I was going to hammer home, is because they have elite yak guys underneath and Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. Like, those two are monsters after the catch, and they're so good at being able to find those soft spaces and then turn up the field. So for that reason, you have to have as many bodies around the ball as possible, so that way you don't just have guys running routes away from guys as leverage. I wrote about that with Cooper Kupp, I think right when the season started. It's just like his ability to run those like stick option routes, and you'll just see him just absolutely embarrass nickels and absolutely embarrass safeties, you know, like where they're not even touching the guy. Guys are dropping to their knees trying to defend him. And that was with Jared Goff. And now you have a guy like Matt Stafford. So, again, like we talk about this all the time, is the kind of constraints it puts on you defensively. And, you know, the one thing, aside from just taking away the explosive passes like we were talking about, this was by far the Rams' worst running day. And that, you know, and we've kind of had conversations like, what does this look like, you know, when a team is able to take away the explosives and they don't punish them on the ground? And Stafford did a pretty good job of navigating it, especially like in the second half. He was able to really work that intermediate area of the field. But again, like, that's just going to continue to be the story for them all year long, because we all know, obviously, if they can run the ball and then set up the explosives off of play action, you're never beating them. They're putting up 40 every week if you can't do that. But when they're landing in these situations, and then you know that they want to start working the ball in those underneath to intermediate areas, and they're able to get you back into some of these cover three soft zone types of looks, then, you know, it's just, they're stealing money so often. They're stealing money so often. So, yeah, I 100% agree with what you're saying.
All right. It's about to be a very big weekend in the Big Ten. We're finally going to have some movement here, because we're getting Michigan, Michigan State. And I'm looking this up because I don't want to be wrong about this, but I believe it's Penn State, Ohio State as well this weekend. So, Saturday, October 30th at 7:30 p.m. All right. So, the Big Ten's kind of like slowly kind of simmered for a bit. And like I said, it's about ready to explode, because Iowa's out of it, but we don't know who's going to come out of the other division with Michigan State and Michigan and Ohio State all undefeated in conference. And Ohio State's only one loss out of conference. So let's talk about the Big Ten. What you wanted to talk about specifically were these Big Ten defenses. So, what are you seeing when you're watching the Big Ten defenses?
So, number one, like by EPA per play rank in the FBS, they have 9 of the 14 teams in the conference are in the top 50. So, like, just off the data alone, it tells you that there is some good defense being played. Some of that is being helped by the fact that they get to play Rutgers
and Maryland and Minnesota. And
Maryland. Yes. So some of it is kind of, you know, eating
Indiana
itself.
This year.
Right.
The list goes on.
In okay, Purdue. So
I'll give you that. Let me tell you my stat now. I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm.
7. So that's half of the Big Ten are in the bottom 35 of EPA per play on offense.
Yes.
So this is always the question that we've had this past few years about the Big Ten. It's like, our offense is just really bad, or our defense is really good?
I mean, that's always going to be the story with them, because I will say their bad offenses are like just abject, awful offenses, you know, like beyond debate. But another thing, you know, because we grade at PFF, I went to look for that reason. And half of the conference, 7 of the teams have a defensive grade above 80. So even if they are playing up against some poorer offenses, they're still doing something to perform well. So I was just kind of looking to see, like, if there are any trend lines. And most of it is, you know, some of the stuff that we've talked about within the Big Ten, the identity of the Big Ten defensively, it's been, you know, not completely homogenous. Like, not everybody does the exact same thing, but for the most part, just about everybody there plays 4 down with 2 high safeties. Like, that's crazy. The meta. That is the way that you play defense in the Big Ten, I guess. I don't know whose doctrine it was. I really think a lot of it just comes from Ohio State when D'Antonio was there, like late 90s to early 2000s, and the success that they've had. I think that that has a big piece to do with it. And then obviously when D'Antonio goes to Michigan State, and then there's Pat Narduzzi, and then they're super successful, that has a lot to do with it. So that's just what you see more often than not. Really, the only team that's not in the even front playing with two high safeties is Wisconsin, and they're just in an odd front playing with two high safeties. So there's really not much of a variation there. But I think a lot of the teams that do it kind of treat it differently. So Wisconsin, like, because they're an odd front, the idea is that they're going to get 8 or 9 guys to the football every time because they're in an odd front structure. So even when they do spin down a single high, like, they're still an 8 to 9 man fit. And because they like to drop 8 when they play cover 3, I was kind of talking to you about it before the show, they're able to do some interesting things to protect the edges of the defense. So you can't – it's a lot more difficult to – see a Wisconsin in middle of field close coverage and then say, oh, we're just going to run outside zone, right? And try to run outside zone away from the safety rotation. Well, if it's a 5-3 box, like a legit 5-3 box with two wide outside backers, I don't know what outside zone you're getting to that's not going to get crammed right back, you know, between the tackles. So that was an interesting thing to look at. And then obviously the team that everybody was talking about defensively has been Ohio State and who they are and who they aren't defensively. And really what we're finding is that they're not all that different. I will say the one thing that they do more now is they play with two high on like first and second down, which is something that they just didn't do before. And that's still not the majority of their reps, even over the last couple of weeks. So it's not like some big wholesale change, but I think even they realize probably like it doesn't make sense to tell an offense where you are and where you aren't every play. And there's no rule that says that you have to play with two high safeties and you can never spin down. You know, that's okay too. So being able to add that versatility, I think, has helped them a lot in terms of like fitting the run.
Can you take a step back and for our new listeners, talk about the Ohio State defensive issues that led to the Oregon game, basically something that we've talked about. I know our Austrian friends, I've heard this a million times. We talked about this a lot throughout the offseason, basically leading up to them being in the playoffs last year. We talked about these issues they had. So can you explain what was going on with Ohio State that forced them to fix or change structurally, some structure changes to their defense?
Right. So to paint the picture before we get into details, if you don't understand what I was describing, I would say picture the Seattle Seahawks between 2010 and 2013, just not with good players. Like that's when you talk about their problems, at least not with like, you don't have, if you tried to run the Legion of Boom defense and did not have good edge rushers, if you tried to do that and did not have an elite middle of field safety, if you tried to do that and didn't have an elite slot defender to be able to play cover one, that was the world that they were living in. So because of the kind of, it's not just the scheme, it was the bodies. Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Effectively playing a 4-4. You're playing
2019. The bodies were fine.
Yes. Great. I mean, as good as it's going to get in college football. Elite pass rusher, two NFL outside corners, an NFL corner on the inside.
NFL safety. I think
an NFL was
the safety on that team.
Like that's, if you're going to build the defense, that's what you're building. You're building the defense with that kind of personnel in mind. It's just like, that's a really difficult needle to thread. And obviously, like, to me, even if you took all their defensive backs and just papered them over every year, if you don't have number two on the edge, I still don't think it matters because, you know, and this is something that I've been kind of banging the drum on a lot of the posts that I've had with PFF recently, which is the idea that if you play zone coverage, your pass rush is actually a layer of coverage. I don't like dividing the thought process between them. And I know obviously at this company, we have endless debates about pass rush versus coverage,
I've never heard these debates. What are you talking about?
The dodge that a lot of people say is that you can't have one without the other, or that it's hard to contextualize. I mean, the truth of the matter is that each one is a layer of the other. And if you want to play zone coverage where you're saying we're trying to force the check down, well, you got to be able to force a quarterback to check the football down. You know, you can't always just leave the seams open or just carry the seams where it's essentially turning into cover one and you're not actually getting to the quarterback and affecting him enough to make him dump the ball off. Otherwise, you'll just take those outside passes all day long. Like for as much as they dominated Clemson in the 2020 semifinal game, like it was pretty clear that they had a plan. Wherever Sean Wade was at, Cornell Powell was going to go over there, and they were running some kind of outside vertical option route where it was either going to be a fade or a stop or a comeback. And they were abusing them with that. So, you know, and Alabama attacked them, you know, similarly as well and was able to hit those crossing routes. You just got to have the dudes, and they just haven't had the dudes. And like I said, it's not like it's some wholesale change where they brought in some brand new scheme. They ran some quarters, and Kerry Coombs, as the defense, when he was the defensive backs coach in Tennessee or the defensive coordinator, he ran a lot of too high stuff there as well. So it's clearly it's something that's that they are capable of. Ohio State's identity defensively used to be playing quarters, like the Malcolm Jenkins Greg era. Shana. Yeah, that was their deal. That's what they did. James Laurinaitis, all those guys, like that's who they were for over a decade. So this is more of a new development. That's why I've always been kind of banging the drum that this is a Ryan Day issue and not necessarily a defensive coordinator issue, because you don't make that change unless there's a directive given. But yeah, I mean, that's the world that they're living in and the issues that they've had. And I think that they're just trying to do a little bit more of the too high stuff on early downs. So that way offenses can't just buy these free access throws to get 7, 8, 9 yards and stay in 2nd and 2 and 2nd and 3. No good defense can be sustained in those situations.
That's what we saw in the national championship game last year, was these free access throws to Devonta Smith, like all day. Smith, like, yep. Okay, well, we'll take this, put him wide and just take it. You're playing off. We know you can't press us because we have good players, and then we're just gonna deal with you underneath. 6 yard speed out, glance route, whatever. It was just too easy for them.
And then in a lot of ways, then it becomes a matter of, it's not the fact that cover three itself is a problem, but if you're always in 2nd and 2 and 2nd and 3, you know what you're probably going to have to do? Start rushing 5 and playing cover 1. And then when you tell an offense that you're taking a guy out of coverage and you're playing man, and then they can start doing stuff like max protecting and taking shots downfield. That's why Indiana gave them hell last year. You know, that's why Oregon was able to bother them as much as they were. You're able to pick out the matchups that you want. You can get in formations where you know, like, they can only rotate a certain way, or you're bunching up receivers, or, you know, creating single width formations, meaning there's a tight end on the edge of one formation and all of the wide receivers are on the opposite. Like, cover three isn't necessarily built. Cover one's not necessarily built to deal with offenses that live in those worlds. But if you're always telling an offense that all you got to do is get into that to give it trouble, well, then, yeah, you're going to continue to struggle, and good offensive coordinators are going to wear you out with it. So it's a necessary change, and they're doing some things that I think will work. But at the end of the day, they are who they are. If it's 3rd down and they got to get off the field, they're rushing 5 and playing cover 1, guys. It's not going to change. That will never change. It's who they are.
Yeah, I think they've needed to make these changes just because they just couldn't be so predictable. And they were a little less predictable this year based on body types. Cause we said one of the issues last year was they had a real Sam on the field rather than a nickel for a lot of time. And that meant that when they did rotate, which they did all the time, cause they were always rotated into cover 3 or cover 1, they couldn't get any type of variability with where the rotation went. The rotation always had to come down to the slot receiver because the Sam couldn't be out there on the slot receiver. It wasn't the body type for that. So they were a little better. They got, you know, so, okay, this year they could deal with that because I think, you know, the Sam graduated. I forgot his name. He got drafted in the NFL. But then now the issue was in the Oregon game, which was they just gave you formations that they knew you were going to give them what they wanted. So, and then unbalanced and stuff like that, which really did the, you know, I wrote about unbalanced formations a year ago, saying it might be the next big thing in college football. We're talking about a small percentage of overall plays that are unbalanced. But one of the things that you just kind of can't do is live in a single high world against unbalanced stuff, because they'll just hit you on the backside all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't keep a corner and a safety there, like, man, it's tough. Like, in a too high world, like, it's kind of tough. And that's what Oregon did them. And then, like you're saying now, and I haven't watched as much as you, but yeah, there are some changes, and at least they can just keep teams a little off balance, I think.
Right. At least having a change up. So that was really kind of what I was looking at in terms of stopping the run. And then obviously, you know, a big interest of mine is seeing how teams want to generate pressure. So one of the teams that really stood out to me is Michigan State. And what I had said to you before we got on is basically he kind of took a lot of what Narduzzi was doing at Michigan State and just kind of copied and pasted it over in terms of like when they blitz, they don't want to play man because they don't have man coverage guys, right? This is Michigan State we're talking about at the end of the day, at least not the kind of man coverage guys where you're always trying to play cover one, you know, like you've got to have another way to be able to protect your corners and your overhangs. So what they do is play hot coverage. I know you've written about this at PFF. I've made mention of this, you know, on social media before, but it's basically playing cover three with a six-man rush. So instead of having two guys that are in that, you know, inside hook to curl area and the outside curl to flat area, you basically just have two guys standing in the curl playing off of the quarterback's eyes, you know. So, and it's been good for them. And the reason why it's good for them is because they know how to use it. And the idea of using hot coverage is not necessarily to sack the quarterback. It's just to force the ball out of his hands immediately. That's really what you're looking for. You're trying to get one unblocked rusher that you know the quarterback is responsible for throwing hot off of, getting him in his face, forcing the check down on third and nine. You go make the tackle and you get off the field. Instead of playing press, man-to-man, cover one, and telling the quarterback, hey, if you just take the fade or the back shoulder, if you're good enough to throw it, then you can have it. So that's been something that has been pretty impressive for me. Other than that, I mean, Wisconsin is pretty much like they get out of quarters to run cover one, just like a regular old odd front team does. Like I said, Ohio State, they rush five and play cover one. The things with those types of teams is that if you're rushing five, that's when you kind of have to scheme up an ability to get bodies on the quarterback. Like you have to actually make contact with the quarterback because the offense has enough guys to pick up the blitz, right? Like if they set the protection properly, they'll have guys sliding to where you're sending pressure or the back can stay in and pick it up. And then again, you're playing with one less coverage player and you're not getting the effect on the quarterback that you're after. And a team that's been really good at scheming up contact on the quarterback has been Michigan. They like to rush five and play cover three a whole bunch. So they like to show, you know, we talked about like four from a side pressures where you're bringing four guys off of one side of the offensive line, meaning that the nose tackle or whoever is lined up in the A-gap to the side you're bringing four from is slanting back to the opposite side. So you're kind of trying to find a way to generate a free runner off of the edge or in the interior to affect the quarterback. And then if you're playing cover three behind it instead of cover one, you got eyes on the quarterback, you can maybe break on the ball, get your hands on it, or get a big hit. And if you don't get home because you're playing three deep instead of cover one, you can still play to take away the explosive pass first. And it's not the end of the world if they throw the ball in front of you and you can go tackle it. And that's something they've been really, really effective with as well.
All right. First, if Mel Tucker is the next head coach at LSU, should I be excited or not?
Yes, I would say yes, because it's just going to be like regular old defense. Like there's not going to be him leaning too crazily into one thing or the other. They're basically even in the amount of time they play with two high and one and single high. So you'll get the same kind of variation that you had with the defensive coordinators that you really like.
yeah.
The only thing that he doesn't do that you would miss would be like all the simulated pressures and creepers and stuff, but he's not an odd front guy. Really.
If my favorite team was running a ton of hot pressures, I'd be into that. Like I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
So
that's why I love Venables, man. Like, I'm always going to respect a coach who has the guts to send extra guys and still play zone coverage behind it because there is a certain kind of mentality that comes with that. I talk all the time about my brand as a football consumer, and that is my brand.
Okay. It's funny you talk about – I was actually just looking up last night some of the LSU defensive numbers, and I don't know anything about Durante Jones, who's their defensive coordinator, who I would imagine won't be back next year, which is unfortunate. They've been a lot. They're still not at LSU level defensively, but they've been obviously so much better than the Pelini days. One of the things that has kind of bothered me is just like, and it's kind of like the Ohio State talk where it's like, UK, they want to be a cover one team. Okay, fine, you're LSU. Have at it. You got talent there on the corner. You be cover one team as much as you want. The problem is their next highest defense, the next most played defense is cover three. Whereas with Aranda, it was, yeah, you want to be a cover one team? Yeah, we're LSU. We're going to play cover one. However, what are we doing first down? Well, we play cover two. I'm sorry, we play quarters. You know, play press man quarters, right? So it's like there's at least two different structural things. Whereas we talk about this a lot, there you can get to the same structure in cover one and cover three. So there's not there's so much overlap there in certain things. So that's why I think Durante Jones is probably a really good coach, and it's just everyone there is going to get a bad rap there because of what happened. But yeah, so hopefully I'd be down with Mel Tucker being the next LSU coach. Okay, I want to stick on the Michigan defense for a second. But first, if you enjoy this college football talk, you will certainly enjoy Homefield Apparel, who is a partner on the Too High podcast. Homefield Apparel is a premium collegiate clothing brand out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Incredibly comfortable, officially licensed apparel with vintage college designs. Homefield is in the middle of big news Saturday season two, where they launch a new school collection every Saturday at noon for 16 straight weeks. I just saw someone posted new South Florida merch, and it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. So go on homefieldapparel.com, use promo code PFF to get 15% off your first purchase. That's homefieldapparel.com, promo code PFF for 15% off your first purchase. Okay, so sticking with Michigan, one of the things that my brain went through throughout this offseason and then into watching them play on defense was, okay, so I don't know if I can speak for you. I think I can speak for you when I say that we both love Don Brown, the old Michigan defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. So what is Don Brown? He is an aggressive five-man cover one, five-man rush, cover one coach. Michigan leads the country every year in percentage of snaps where they rush five and play cover one behind it. This is what they are.
Yep.
Well, so Jim Harbaugh goes to talk to his brother, John, at the Ravens and says, give me your best coach, basically. And whatever it is, and he goes again, guys. I think his name is Mike McDonald. I think it was a DB coach, linebacker coach. I'm not really sure. He gets him to run the Michigan defense. So I'm looking at this and thinking, okay, but what do the Ravens do on defense? They blitz five and they play cover one behind it. So I was like, now I will say that even if you're, you know, broadly speaking, both you have two defensive coordinators or two defenses that rush five and blitz and play cover one, just maybe having a new voice in there is always good. Like that's not, so there is that aspect to it. You know what I mean? And then the micro details can be different too. However, what's happened is, like we've talked about, is they've run a Big Ten defense, which I think is really interesting. Like they've said, okay, you know what? We're getting torched when we play cover one now. We might just not be recruiting good enough players on the outside to play cover one anymore. So enough of this. We're done with it. We're going to play so much zone. We're going to sit in quarters. And then when we spin, we're going to spin late into not cover one, but into the cover three. And we're just going to live in this world, and we're going to let our very good pass rush take care of a lot of things. Are you saying the same thing?
Yes, 100%. That's the big stark difference between them, between McDonald and Don Brown. I think when Michigan was playing on Fox on Saturday, I think it was Joel Klatt who was on the call. And the way he described it, I thought was a really smart way to look at it, which is like Don Brown is a fastball pitcher in baseball. Like he's got a 98-mile-per-hour fastball. But that's what he's going to throw, you know, and you know it's coming. And all you got to do is just wait for the moment where you've got the call to blow him up, and then you will. I think that now, while it's not a complete 1A, like I know that Don Brown tried to add some stuff to his defense, but the most important thing I think I've seen from McDonald is just the idea that, like, and we continue to come back to the same themes in our conversations, it's that it's okay to do more than one thing well. And they do multiple things well. And that means playing a little bit more zone coverage, rushing five safely. That is something that you see. Like if you want to talk about a concept that you borrow from the NFL to bring down to the college level, it's the idea of playing zone coverage when you're sending pressure, right? Assuming that a quarterback is good enough to know where to go with the football if they see pressure, and not just giving the man and allowing them to pick out matchups or throw slants, or just throw the ball out to the running back in a one-on-one tackle situation. So that's probably been the thing that I've liked the most is just the variability. Like I know their run defense grade when they're fitting to run out of split safety is like 91.1. And their average depth of tackle is like 3.2 yards. So they handle their business out of split safeties fitting the run, just like you would expect an Iowa or a Michigan State under Narduzzi to do fitting the run. And then when it's time to close the middle of the field, to your point, like it's not just, hey, we're going to spin weak and just play regular old cover three. It's like, no, if we're doing that for a reason. So we're probably rushing five. We're probably sending somebody trying to find, you know, an unblocked pressure. And then if we don't, we're still okay because we're playing some kind of softer zone coverage. And that's been the biggest help. Obviously, like in terms of their strength of schedule, a lot of this stuff we won't have a final say on, you know, until after this next weekend. And then obviously in the big game in November. So we will have more important data points that we need to get to. But in terms of like establishing an identity, they pretty clearly have one. And I think that this is something that they can carry over. And to your point, like just like we were talking about with Ohio State, it's just about lessening the degree of difficulty. You do not always want to have to be the better player. You don't always want to have the perfect call. This allows you to do things where you don't have to have the perfect call and it's not going to kill you. So that's really the thing that I've been most happy about with watching them is what the way that they can be multiple and sending pressure and playing zone coverage behind it. It's a really nice way to protect their defense.
All right, here's a crazy stat for you. Just look this up. Michigan, in the three last Don Brown years, so 18, 19, 20. I will say this is PFF charting. PFF has them charted as having played in 3 years, 101 cover three snaps. We have them being charted as having played cover three 136 this year alone. So that is, besides the a lot less cover one, they're about 18% less cover one this year than last year. But the cover three snaps are, that's what they are now. There's this big zone team able to kind of sit there and let some players, like you said, let that third layer of the defense, which happens to include Aiden Hutchinson, who's going to be a top 10 pick, top 15 pick, top five pick, I don't know, in the draft next year, just work. You know, let it ride, let it simmer out here. So that's been a huge shift for them, and they've been tremendous on defense. I think them and Georgia, I think like points scored, they're pretty close to the top. Yeah, they've been awesome.
So, I mean, those have been my two favorites so far this year has been Michigan and Georgia. And while they don't do things exactly the same, when I talk about like layering your defense, I think that there's a lot of the same principles being applied. You don't always have to play boom or bust. We're not in an era, honestly, of playing boom or bust defense, because you're probably the busts that you will have are so much more explosive now and happen too commonly to play boom or bust defense all the time. So that's the fact that they were able to make that pivot, that Harbaugh was able to make that pivot, you know, and it helps having, you know, a big brother in the NFL that happens to have one of the best defensive staffs in all of football to be able to go borrow from. But hey, I guess you take advantage of the opportunities that are in front of you. And I think that this, like I said, this is something to me that's going to be that they're going to have the ability to replicate for as long as they have McDonald as a defensive coordinator, because I'm sure his trajectory probably would bring him right back to the NFL sometime soon.
I wanted to look this up because I was so sure that the Big Ten played the least amount of man coverage. Mm-hmm. And it's not true. I did look this up last night. You got about like 19.5% in cover, like specifically cover one in all of the Big Ten every down this season. ACC is 17%. Big 12 is 13%. Pac-12 is...
That's not a surprise.
Yeah, Pac-12 was 24%. And honestly, the SEC was... I was like, oh my God, the SEC is going to be like 50%. And it's like, it's not. I think I deleted the SEC number. Anyways, it's around that 19 to 21%. But the funny thing is, I bet the SEC would have been a lot higher a couple of years ago before all that three high safety stuff came in.
Yes. Yes.
Which is why the Big 12 is so low.
I mean, a lot of the, I mean, we know what it is. Like the relationship that everybody in the SEC has with trying to copy what's happening at Tuscaloosa has been, you know, has had an influence on the way the defense has played. And to your point, when all that three high safety stuff came around, you started seeing it pop up like, huh, more teams are playing cover two. More teams are just playing cover three on third down. There's not as much, again, rushing five and playing cover one like you're some NFL defense all the time. So, yeah. You know, that influence, and again, I mean, it's about matching the era of football. When I wrote about Georgia and all the simulated pressures, like I said, the comparison I made was, it's like calling an RPO on defense, right? The idea that, hey, if the opportunity is there for us to create a negative play, we want to have a guy that can go take advantage of it. But if not, we don't want to unwind all the layers of this defense just to go try to create a negative play. If we don't get there, we don't get there, but it's not going to be the end of the world. It's not all or nothing all the time. Yeah. You don't have to gamble all the time.
It's like, hey, if the slant, if that RPO slant is there, we'll take it and we'll go get 8 yards, 10 yards. But if not, we're not in a drop back situation with a bad quarterback where he's going to have to read it out. You're just, well, you hand the ball. Exactly. There you go. That's it. Whether it's football success or financial savvy, the right questions help set the stage for winning strategies. Western and Southern is teaming up with PFF's very own Chris Collinsworth to share insights that can help put you ahead on both your fantasy and financial scoreboards. Want to hear about Chris's old playing days or behind the scenes with Al on Sunday Night Football? How about a need to know for your financial future? Now you can ask about either or both. And every football or financial question you ask earns you a chance to win a catered party for February's big game. I'm sure just a ton of Skyline chili. Check out the Chris Collinsworth podcast and Western and Southern's Instagram for answers to the best questions each week. Submit your questions at westernsouthern.com/askcrisp. Jesus, not crisp. westernsouthern.com/askcris. One more time, that is westernsouthern.com/askcris, C-R-I-S. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. Remember, with Western and Southern, you can rest assured on game day. All right, let's flip to a couple of Big Ten offenses that we're both kind of into. First, we'll stick on Michigan. You like Michigan's offense because it fits what you are as a human being. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. Again, I have a very strong brand, and I'm not moving off of it. I know I work at the football analytics company, and I'm sure I probably stand alone on this hill, but there is so much value to me in the ability to be able to get into multiple tight ends or two back like formations and create extra gaps in the running game. I don't think that you can really be an elite offense without it. It's just, again, degree of difficulty. Can you do it? Yes. Does it make sense to live in that? Probably not. And, you know, the 11 personnel stuff, and we talk about this in the NFL, right? Like, matter of fact, Justice was the one who made the point that kind of blew my mind. The slot receiver's got to block if you want to play in 11. Otherwise, you can't do it in the NFL. Okay. Because you're not going to be able to win one-on-ones all that often.
Justice is now saying, as of today, Justice is saying now his new thing is that the Chiefs should trade Travis Kelce so they could actually run that type of bigger offense. So I just want you to know, when you bring up Justice Mosqueda, this is the type of takes you're getting also.
This is the reason why I said I'm not anti anything except Justice. Every once in a while, Justice will drop a heater in the chat, and he and I have great dialogue. I'll put it that way.
But go on.
So, I mean, the ability, to be able to create those extra gaps in the run game, they're a very good counter team. It's a good counter punch to have in 12 personnel if you run a lot of inside zone. And because of Gattis and where he comes from with Alabama, they like to be in the gun and in pistol a bunch to run that inside and outside zone combination. So that change up is good. And then, you know, this year, I think this is probably about as good of quarterback play as they've had in a while. Yeah. Like, at least in terms of efficiency and the ability to put the ball where it needs to be.
The baseline is so much higher.
Yes, much, much higher. And at a lot of levels, being able to pass at all three levels, honestly. And I think that they're just better at dealing with some of the stuff that they're seeing from defenses as well. So I'm not – the defensive thing I'm not shocked by in terms of performance. I didn't know that the profile of the defense would look like this. But in terms of, like, the offense – I had a feeling if they spent enough time with it, based on what I've seen from what it was at Alabama, that if they actually committed to it, that they'd probably be okay. And all they've really had to do so far this year is just be okay, because their running game has been spectacular all year.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be my question is like, well, let's see what happens when you're playing against Michigan State, you're playing against Ohio State, you're playing against Penn State. They still got all those three teams left. You know, what happens when they punch you in the mouth a little bit and you can't get this running game grinding a bit? Like Cade McNamara is going to have to be a player, and we don't know. And they lost their best player receiver out for the season week one or week two, and that hasn't really affected them at all. It's Ronnie Bell. So, like that seems like it's going to affect them at some point. I hope to a certain degree it doesn't. I hope it works out for them. But, yeah, this is an interesting offense that they've been doing for a while. You know what I mean? This is still, like, Harbaugh's fingerprints are on so much of this. But, like you said, the quarterback play is so much better. And is Cade McNamara an NFL quarterback? Probably not.
Probably not.
But they've been really hurting at that position for quite a while. Quite a while.
Right.
So just having that baseline where they can say, hey, you know, like we can go get a first down here, like once in a while on third down, on drop back. Hey, we can go and play action because we're running the ball so well on first down and hit some big plays. Like that's really changed, I think, a lot of what Michigan has been able to do this season they haven't been able to do in years past.
I mean, this next – their game against Michigan State is going to be like a watershed moment in exactly what this offense is when you're playing up against a defense that can punch back. So that's going to be, and then on the offense, on the other end of the ball, we'll get a very clear look at what Michigan's defense is against a downhill punch you in the mouth offense as well. So this is going to be, you know, in terms of narrative, not only just the data, but in terms of narrative, we're going to get a pretty clear look at who these teams are and are not. For the rest of the Big Ten slate.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, people are not going to be happy with this, but, like, it's a semifinal game for both teams.
Right.
With Ohio State, and we'll talk about them in a second, with Ohio State being the kind of Big Ten, I want to say Big Ten East, like being the Big Ten East championship game, right? We're assuming that Ohio State deals with Penn State. Probably easier said than done because Penn State's got a pretty nice defense, but we're assuming that. So this really is a Michigan State, Michigan game that's going to be determine who plays against Ohio State for the chance to go and play against, I guess, still Iowa. I don't even know at this point. I guess still Iowa in the on the other side of the coin in Indianapolis. All right, hold on a second. It's football season. It's football season. Jonte, is it football season? It's football season. And do you know what that means? It means we're going for two here with the sponsors of today's show, Manscaped. Blitzing through hairs has never been easier, and it's time for you to join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using promo code PFF at manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping. It's three and out the window with all the trimmers. Now go tame that Wildcat offense. Wildcat offense, man. Still exists 10-15 years later after Arkansas brought it out. The brand new Lawnmower 4.0 is here to take your defense to the next level. This fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on off switch that can engage a travel lock, and gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. Did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Rain, snow, or sleet are no match for the waterproof power of the 4.0. There's no 15-yard penalty for this clipping. There's no 15-yard penalty for this clipping. There's no 15-yard penalty for this clipping. Get 20% off and free shipping with promo code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code PFF. Stiff arm your pubes out of the playoffs this year with Manscaped. I glitched there for a second, but we will recover. All right. I want to do a little bit on Ohio State's offense because it's disgusting right now.
Yes.
It's disgusting. Offensive line.
They are back in machine mode.
Oh, my God. Offensive line mauling people. Receiving corps, we knew was going to be great at the beginning of the year, and they've proven to be even probably better than I even thought. And CJ Stroud is really good, man. Like I said, it's like week two or something. I was like, yo, my boy, like he's still really good, even though they lost, even though whatever. He's not Justin Fields, whatever. He's still really, really good, and the offense is just flying around and absolutely dominating people. One of the things that I thought was interesting was a lot of people were asking, like, okay, well, they were running with Dwayne Haskins, you know, I guess in the early Ryan Day days when he was like the OC, like, you know, all these like man beaters, all these meshes, like mesh. And then they kind of got away with that. I got away from that They got away from that when Justin Fields was his quarterback. And they're kind of still in that same mode now where not a lot of crossing routes, not a lot of mesh. It's so vertical, the offense. It's very spread and very vertical. 11 personnel, but you're not seeing the kind of cool, oh, we're an 11 personnel, but we play bunch, we run duo stuff. No, it's like we're an 11 personnel, one tight end attached, no one else is really attached, not a lot of bunches. When we really want to run the football inside zone and they go pistol, run outside zone, they've been doing that for a few years. And then everything's just vertical outside, man. A lot of four verts, a lot of like, hey, we're going to run vertical on the sideline and we're going to stop and we're going to hit you. I watched the Indiana game, didn't even see a lot of Y cross. So it's really just not a lot of stuff over the middle of the field, just like vertical. And they absolutely just kill you because they don't. And they're in this mode where, unlike what we're saying, where, hey, you probably need to be able to do two really good things. They kind of don't have to because they're so much better than you at every position on the field.
And not only, like, they're one of the best teams at being able to get the ball thrown in the seams. Like, they've been that for the last few years. Like, that was a big thing with Fields. And I think that really while all the criticism was happening, and I thought that some of it was justified, like you, I was always on the side of C.J. Stroud being more than fine as a quarterback. But because, you know, knowing I think what we know of that offense and how much it asks of its quarterbacks and receivers, you just got to have the time in it. You have to have the time in it. As a brand new quarterback, he needed to grow. He needed to kind of build a little bit of a rhythm. Now that he has one, you can see that vertical element of the offense. The way that they're able to hit crossing routes, like it feels like everything is always perfect case scenario. They hit a drag. The drag is coming to the field, and there's literally not a single defender home. Like, the way that they're able to scheme up some of this stuff to be open is really impressive. And one of the things that's a big piece of this offense that Stroud always impresses me on is that he can throw that outbreaking route to the field. Like, that's a really big piece of the offense in terms of opening up the seams, right? Otherwise, that corner to the field can just really squeeze the space out of that seam route, you know, especially in cover three. So you have to be able to throw the ball wide, and he has the arm strength to do it, and they call it a bunch, and then it just opens up all the crossers, all the seams, all the go routes and the comebacks. Like, it is seriously machine-like the way that they're able to move the ball in the passing game, and it's all deep passes.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, I'd say the same thing. It's vertical. They are down the field. Even in the dropback game, they are down the field. And yeah, I think that ability to throw that. So it's like everything kind of, you know, it's very circular football, you know, scheme versus scheme is very circular, but it's like, okay, well, they throw this out route to the field or even to the boundary sometimes, but like to the field, right? And that's a huge part of how it sets up everything else. Well, it's like, okay, how do you deal with a team that's going to run a lot of out routes to the field or just in general? Well, you press them. You ever heard of Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave?
I was saying, when it's those two outside, I don't think so.
So like they give you so many no win answers, and they force you to play these like off coverages, and that's why they're so dominant against the exact defenses that we've been talking about in the Big Ten. I mean, they're dominant against everyone, I guess, but like they're so dominant against these quarters defenses because you rush four against them, they block you. They had some miscommunications last year that led to some pressures on Fields, but that's not happening this year, and their offensive line is dominant. So they block you, and then you're just in a no-win situation down the field because they're gonna force you into your play cover four, except it turns into cover zero. Right. We talk about this a lot, right? Cover four can turn into cover zero if you're not getting after the quarterback, especially. when they just bypass your intermediate layer of defense and they're up on the safeties, and then you're cooked against these guys.
Yes. Yeah, especially against this team. And to our point about how vertical this is, I'm looking at their targeted routes. The top 12 of the top 12 routes, the only ones that have an average depth of target beneath 8 yards are screens in backfield Jesus. Players. So if I read it all, it's 11 yards, 8 yards, 8 yards, 21 yards, 29 yards, 11 yards, 11 yards, 10 yards, 22 yards. So they are pushing that thing all as far down the field as you can. And to your point about being able to find those holes, because you have outside receivers who can really take the top off the defense, there are so many times where you'll see them running what's supposed to be an over route or what's supposed to be a dig route. And he'll just sit the ball, he'll just sit down in the middle of the field, and there's nobody even close. It's a practice throw. And they're as good at that as like an Alabama or all the elite offenses that we've talked about, oh, you know, over the last 2 to 3 years.
All right. Just a reminder that right now you can get 25% off any PFF subscription with the promo code TOOHIGH, T-W-O-H-I-G-H. So you're helping out the podcast really when you do this. 25% off any PFF subscription with promo code TOOHIGH. Grades and data are live for every single player who logged a snap last week. Go check out the highest graded players from week 7, I believe, in the NFL. What can you get with PFF subscription? Well, let me tell you, all of PFF's locked article content, PFF's NFL and college football betting dashboards, are grade powered projections, cover probabilities, and betting values. 0 to 100 grades of every single player, including the top rookies on every team, player prop tools, which show positive and negative value for every NFL prop, and much, much more. Support the pod and use promo code TOOHIGH, T-W-O-H-I-G-H, for 20% off any subscription. All right, last thing, I said we want to bookend this college football discussion with some quarterback play in the NFL. Tua had an all right game, had a good game against Atlanta as they almost get the W, except, and I wrote about this, so you can go on pff.com and read up on my thoughts on Tua and where they should go with him on, you know, by the time you listen to this, it'll be up on the website. Problem with Tua right now, they're bad. Like, Dolphins are bad. They're 1-6. They're not making the playoffs. But the issue is, like, they've tried to protect him so much. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that their offensive line is no good. And that's on Chris Greer for just being wrong about every pick they made on the offensive line. They tried to get younger. They tried to get better. But you just picked wrong players. Sorry. And it would have been nice. Like, they could have accidentally hit on, like, taking, like, a Tristan Wirfs or taking Mekhi Becton or someone like that. Like, they had picks in that range to a certain degree, and they had a whole bunch of picks. Or maybe a second-round player or a third-round player that just was better. Just, like, right out of the box, you get an offensive lineman who can play, like Rashawn Slater. That has not happened. They're still waiting on a lot of development with these guys, who, and it might not ever happen. So I understand that they protected Tua with RPOs, super high RPO rates, screens, play actions. But it didn't work. You're 1-6. Defense regressed. We kind of knew it was going to happen because they were so good on third down last year. We thought it was probably going to happen. They're not good anymore. Offense is okay. Tua is a little better this year, but protecting him hasn't worked. It hasn't made the team better. They're 1-6. So my thing was just like, hey, you know what? Like, and I know that they'll never do this, but my thing was like, hey, drop him back. Let's see what we got here. Because we just don't know anything about Tua right now. Drop him back, see what you got, and hopefully you get a clean evaluation of the guy rather than him just throwing, 6-yard slant RPOs to Mike Gesicki the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, it's, our friend Derek says, like, it's enough. Like, I think he tweeted last night that he can't take any more RPOs from the Dolphins. And I'm in agreement with him. I just think that now, again, we're a couple of years deep with Tua. He obviously had some of the injury issues that he had to start off his career. But now that he's healthy, the defense has regressed. So you know that you're not a contending team right now. Yeah, just cut the guy loose. If it don't work and you got to make another move at quarterback, then you do. But and it's not all on Tua. A lot of it is what you described, missing on draft picks. Missing on some guy, not being able to, you know, get veterans on your offense in free agency. Like, I think that if this Dolphins offense from a personnel perspective had what Daniel Jones had when everybody was healthy in New York, and you wanted to run this offense, you might be able to make it work because you have guys in the slot and outside who can win one-on-ones athletically enough to where if you want to be this RPO heavy offense and always work within 7 to 8 yards of the line of scrimmage, you could probably do so. But it's not like they have some dominant run game. They don't, the RPO stuff isn't opening up any extra space for them to take downfield shots. And they haven't been a downfield offense at all anyway, so it doesn't even matter if it did. So for that, you know, for that reason, if you don't do that, to me, then that's a true indictment on Tua. Because what that would tell me is that you don't even think enough of him as a quarterback to take the chance. So if they're in that position, there's real trouble. And I do think that, you know, almost regardless, I think they probably should be in the market for another quarterback anyways, based on the way that this year has gone. But, yeah, I think that now, based on the way things are, you got to be able to kind of cut this guy loose. And if it don't work, you're probably going to ship the guy off anyways. So at least take the shot and see if it works.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is maybe they're just like, hey, we are going to trade this guy. Let's not make him look horrible. Like if we think True. He's bad, because if we're going to trade him and therefore we don't think he's good, then let's give him all the RPOs in the world and all the screens and make him look better than he is and try and fool somebody. But yeah, if you want to get a real evaluation on him, like throw the football with him, man. Just drop back there and throw the football with him. And I agree with you with that Daniel Jones stuff. Like they just don't have winners on the outside at all. Like they got slot players who can play. Gesicki.
Right.
Can play. Obviously, Waddle early in his career, we both liked him in Alabama. We think he can play. So, but the outside guys are, I couldn't even name you who the outside guys are, to tell you the truth. And so, yeah, they're in a rough spot. And like the whole offensive line is no good. So now one of the things before we get out of here that I was thinking as I was going through thinking about Tua was, you know, one of the issues with quarterback now when you draft them and have to play them early because you want them on the small contract and to build a team around and blah blah blah. The issue is like if they're going to play right now, they need an elite trait out of the box. Yes. So yes. Lamar Jackson, I don't have to tell you what his elite trait is. Right. Justin Herbert, easily identifiable elite trait.
Right.
Joe Burrow,
Josh Allen, elite. Josh
Allen. Joe Burrow, elite trait with the accuracy. Allen and Herbert are the arm strength. Lamar is the unbelievable legs. Mahomes kind of an outlier because he's kind of everything.
Right.
But yeah, all these guys need an elite something to fall back on while they learn, while they become smart enough to play in the NFL, where they can just deal with everything that's in front of them with their mind. Does Tua have an elite trait?
No. The narrative that his elite trait was his processing ability. And I'm not saying that that was false. I just think that it was probably oversold a little bit because there is plenty of, you can see that he can work through progressions and put the ball where it needs to be. I just don't think that it's at as high a level as how it was kind of purported coming out of Alabama.
And
well, go ahead.
No, I think that can't be your elite trait because it's probably
probably
not as good as anyone thinks. Because once you go from college to the NFL, it's fucking hard.
Right. There you go. That's the thing. It can be elite, but college elite processing and NFL elite processing, way different. Much, much different. The kind of decision-making process is much different. So that to me is, you know, to piggyback on your point, that's really the issue with Tua. It's like, because he's processing guy, but he's not a strong arm guy. He's not elite athlete guy. Part of the processing in the NFL is being able to do some things that exist outside of the typical margins of what you'd expect in a play, being able to create out of structure. And he's never been an out of structure guy. He just happened to play at a college that never ever required him to really be out of structure. Again, if you were playing for like the Rams or the Buccaneers, where, you know, everything is dressed up perfectly and you got a whole bunch of talent, then he'd probably look like how he did at Alabama. I wouldn't say that he would be some Super Bowl winning quarterback, but he'd probably look a lot closer to what we saw in 2018 and 2019 when he was in college than what we've seen of him as a pro. But again, in the pros, it's not like that. Things don't always work out that way. And if you don't have that elite trait, to your point, you end up in situations like this. And, you know, because we are playing rookie quarterbacks so often, another layer of that is not only do you have to have an elite trait, but early in your career, they're probably going to try to run your offense that you came into the NFL understanding, or they're going to try to make it, try to intimate as much of that as they possibly can, save for like a Mac Jones. And even with them, I think that they're doing more out of 11 personnel that he's comfortable with now than the way that they looked in the preseason and to start the year. So for that, you know, for that reason, like, you have to have something that's going to buy you some more margin for error. And Tua has never been a guy that could exist, I think, successfully in the NFL without much of a margin for error. That was always my take with him. I think that he'll be okay as an NFL quarterback. He's just not going to be a top tier guy. And I think that that's kind of the evidence we're getting right now.
Your top trait can't be can throw an RPO slant. Is a good RPO quarterback? Yes. It's not a trait. Sorry.
Yeah,
is a good 12 personnel play action quarterback?
Play action.
Not a trait, unfortunately, as much as we want to believe it is. All right, we're done here. Deontay, bye. See ya.
See ya.
Have a good week. See ya. Right. See ya Wednesday.